Welcome to the Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal. We examine things like habits of entrepreneurs, emerging trends, financing, marketing, unique ideas, where to get help, even how to get started on your own. Want to tell the story of your small business? Send me an email at gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. Today's stories: small businesses trying to go cashless meet government resistance, and how freelancers and telecommuters are creating a renaissance in cities outside major hubs. Those stories after this. Running a business is hard work, but getting the right insurance coverage for it doesn't have to be. Geico Commercial Insurance makes it easy to get excellent coverage so you spend less time worrying and more time growing your business. Geico Commercial Insurance offers great coverage like general and professional liability, business owner's policy, workers' comp, and so much more. Go to geicocommercial.com for more information and to start your coverage today. That's geicocommercial.com. It's becoming more and more common. You grab a sandwich for lunch, then tap your phone or hand over your credit card because paying with cash is no longer an option. It may be quick, it may be easy, but is it fair to consumers? A growing number of lawmakers don't think so. Several cities and states have passed or are considering bills that prohibit retailers from refusing to accept cash. This is hitting some small businesses especially hard. More from Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today. Charisse, who are these laws for?
Yeah, you've got a growing number of businesses that are not accepting cash. They want you to use your mobile wallet or to use a credit or a debit card because it reduces the chance of theft, and they're not dealing with all that change in dollar bills, which slows down the line. So they have a lot of incentives for going cashless, but a growing number of cities and even states are saying that that shuts out millions of people who don't have bank accounts, who don't have access to a credit card. And so they're passing laws that say, no, you can't do it. You've got to accept cash as well as these other means of payment.
Is this generally for the unbanked, as they say, folks who prefer only to use cash or only have availability to cash, for cash?
It's for the unbanked and the underbanked, and there, again, are millions of people that fall into that category. About 6.5% of households in the U.S. are unbanked. They don't have an account, or maybe they're lacking photo ID, and so they don't have access to a credit card or a debit card. But there are also a lot of people who are getting concerned about privacy, and they've seen these big data breaches with Equifax and different banks and different companies, and they worry about, A, the government or some company being able to track every payment that they make, and then they worry about their data being breached if there's a problem. And so for both of those reasons, you have a lot of folks who are pushing back on the requirement that you can't go to dig in and buy lunch or do certain things unless you have a credit or a debit card.
Yeah. All right. So I guess part of the sticky issue here is that in some ways, businesses may feel that they're being told how to operate. Is that part of this situation?
Oh, yeah. I spoke to a guy who owns a chain of or collection of roasted coffee shops in New Jersey. And he went cashless because he found that like 80% of the transactions were being done with a credit or debit card anyway, and it was a lot easier on his business to not have to deal with the cash. But he still allowed people to use dollars and cents if they wanted to, and basically he just told the baristas, you know, take their money, put it in your pocket, and use your own personal card to finish the transaction.
Oh,
so he
wow.
was already trying to accommodate folks. But then it turned around and the New Jersey passed this law that says, nope, you can't take cash, you can't refuse to take cash, period. And so now he's doing it again, but he says, you know, he really resents being told by the government, you know, how he accepts payment for his services. He feels that it's kind of anti-democratic and even un-American.
Wow. We're speaking with Charisse Jones. He's about how many businesses now are trying to go cash-free, but some cities are saying, no, you can't do that. There are too many unbanked folks. I read one time, and it may have been one of your stories, about how cash counting actually can be very time-consuming for businesses, say, at the end of the day.
It is. It's, you know, it's laborious. You've got the people who work in the store that have to reconcile the receipts to the cash in the drawer. You have to worry about security. You might need a courier to come and pick the money up to make sure it gets transported to the bank. Or you have to go as the owner to each of your locations to pick up the money and transport it, which can be dangerous. I mean, it can set you up for being robbed. If you go to a restaurant and you can just use your card, you know, they swipe you and you're out in a couple of seconds. If they're making making change. It slows the line down. It takes more time. And we know that people are very impatient. They want to get what they need and get going. And so there's certainly a lot of reasons why people feel that being cashless is the way to go, even if it has potentially discriminatory effect on some customers.
Well, you're actually also inviting more fees, right? I mean, you avoid credit card, debit card fees with cash.
Exactly. And you're avoiding theft by the employees, which, you know, who could that in some cases. And also somebody that knows that there's cash on the premises, and so it can set you up as a potential robbery target. And so, again, you need more cameras in the store. You need to maybe have a safe in the back. You need a courier to come pick the money up, or you've got to drop it off yourself and worry about safety when you're in your car. So there are definitely some safety concerns, and if you don't have cash on the premises, that risk really goes down.
All right. You mentioned this can adversely affect communities of color. And you also said some businesses actually have changed course on this. What's happening there?
Yeah, Sweetgreen, which sells salads and quinoa bowls and is a real big hit, had gone cashless a year ago or so, or 2 years ago, and was really, you know, talking about all the advantages of how it was going to be faster and safer for everybody involved. And then in the wake of, you know, all of these studies coming out and people pushing back and saying, hey, you know, you're really cutting off a lot of potential customers who maybe don't have a credit card or a debit card, they decided that by the end of this year, they're going to go back to accepting cash. Similarly with Amazon Go, which, you know, the whole premise was you can go into these stores and, you know, kind of get your products, get your items, and walk out. They've also gone back to accept, well, they've begun to accept cash, I should say, in San Francisco and New York, and plan to do it at all of their stores in the coming months or maybe in the next year or so, because they also realized that they were shutting out some of their customers. So, you know, folks are really taking a look at that policy and realizing that, you know, it has some unintended consequences.
Are there more and more cities stepping up to tell businesses, hey, slow down with the cashless policy?
Yeah, well, Washington, D.C., and New York are both considering similar bills to Philadelphia and San Francisco and New Jersey, which already have such laws on the books. So they're looking at it. And Connecticut has a state legislator who wants to introduce a similar law this year. So, you know, it's not a majority of states or cities by any means, but you do have a growing number who are concerned and looking at it.
You know, it's funny because I feel like I have the... maybe not quite the full spectrum, but it's still old school near me. I think two small businesses within a mile from me, a haircut place and an ice cream shop, both take cash only. They still haven't, you know, even adopted plastic yet. I got to manage my wallet as to, you know, when I'm going where.
Yeah, that is really old school. You're right. And depending on where you're at, you know, you have to kind of accommodate it. I mean, if you don't have access to a card, you're really shut off from a whole new economy now, because a lot of shopping happens online. It's hard to rent a car without a card. But, you know, for a lot of people, for various reasons, having an account is just not an option. Or maybe they're not comfortable. If you're an older American, you know, you're used to cash, you feel safer that way, and you don't want to have to use a card or use Apple Pay on your phone to pay for things. So you have to accommodate different customers.
Speaking of accommodation, you mentioned Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta has gone cashless, but there's kind of a big however.
Yeah, what they've done is if you want to use cash or you don't realize their policy has changed, they've set up kiosks throughout the stadium. So you basically can go ahead and get a debit card for the amount you want to spend, and then that's what you can use to buy concessions, to buy snacks and other things at the stadium. So it's kind of a smart way to go about it for people who, again, don't feel comfortable or don't have access. They're able to get that card for that venue, or you can use it, you know, in other places because it's Visa, and that way you kind of get around the problem of shutting out some people who don't have a debit or credit card.
Thanks, Charisse. Charisse Jones, national business correspondent at USA Today. More after this.
This human resources professional is a rock star thanks to Kronos, and this is her hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm the dream, and you should know that.
Now we're engaging all the best people.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
A group of workers is fueling a renaissance in U.S. cities that lie outside the major job hubs. People who do their jobs from home, freelance, or constantly travel for work are migrating away from expensive urban centers toward cheaper cities. Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Eisen has been looking at the trend. Ben, what's up here?
So you've seen a lot of people leave some of the biggest cities, San Francisco, LA, New York, and they're moving to smaller cities. Places like Denver, Austin, Portland, Oregon come up a lot. But you're also seeing people move to even smaller places. Places like Boise and parts of Utah are booming right now. And that really reflects sort of a broad migration that's happening around the country. So one of the things that we found as we were kind of looking through this was that a lot of the folks who are moving are remote workers. These are people who can basically take their jobs from one place to another and change their quality of life, lower their cost of living, and effectively give themselves big raises by moving to places like Boise.
Yeah. All right. So a little bit on that note then, the reason for the migration is usually what, housing-related costs, cost of living?
I mean, it's a lot of things. I think on the one hand, it's getting more and more difficult to live in the biggest cities. Rents and home prices are going up a lot. Cost of living is going up a lot generally. You also have people thinking that now is a good time to go somewhere that has a different quality of life. People who like hiking go to the mountains. People who want to be by the ocean go to the ocean. That kind of thing is something that people are starting to think about more and more, especially, you know, with the economy in a relatively good spot, workers fairly confident and sort of able to make those moves.
You said, too, that has brought a boom to these cities, some of the ones you mentioned. And while the ultimate effects aren't clear yet, the development comes with a few downsides. Like what?
Well, I think if you look at Boise specifically, it's a good example of some of the growing pains that can happen. There's rising home prices. There's more traffic. And some of the infrastructure is just kind of not big enough to support the influx of people into Boise. So that's sort of one of the things that you see. And then when you think about remote workers might move to a city, but they are working for a company in another state. So if I lived in Boise and I worked for Google, for example, Google isn't necessarily investing in broadening the highways to support the increased traffic and that kind of thing. So you don't necessarily get all of that investment.
We're speaking with Ben Eisen, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Workers Are Fleeing Big Cities for Small Ones and Taking Their Jobs With Them. So when home prices in, for example, the Boise, Idaho area go up because of people moving in, do the cities that they leave see home prices start to fall down, or is there still enough demand to keep those prices propped up in like an LA or Chicago?
We haven't really seen that yet, and I think we should be clear here that the biggest cities are still drawing more people than they're losing. It's just that's slowed down a lot. So it's not as though the biggest cities are kind of falling out of favor broadly, but you are seeing some of these people move kind of at the margins.
Yeah. You said, too, some regions see remote work as a promising way to lure people who otherwise wouldn't consider the move. So what are cities and states doing on that front?
Yeah, you've seen a number of regions basically introduce programs to try to attract remote workers, and often they do that by giving away money to help people get settled. You're seeing this in the state of Vermont, in a region in Alabama, and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they have a program that basically, if you're accepted, you can receive $10,000 to relocate to Tulsa and work remotely from there.
So in the suburbs of, say, Boise, Idaho, of Eagle, Meridian, is it possible that remote workers might go even further out or even to further remote locations?
I mean, I think the sort of broader trend that you're seeing is, first, you saw a lot of people move to places like Denver and Austin, which are sort of on the bigger side of the kind of so-called secondary cities, and now you're seeing people move to the smaller ones, to Boise, to Missoula, to Reno, to these places that are kind of a bit smaller in size. So could you see that continue to play out in that direction? Sure. Yeah, you could.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Eisen, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Reminder, by the way, the Small Business Report is found on our website, thismorningwithgordondeal.com. That's also where you can hear our daily news program called This Morning, America's First News. Again, if you'd like to share your small business story, send me an email at gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. Thanks for listening to The Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal.